Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with 7 cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my next guest today is City Museum Curator of Collections and Exhibits, Nico Sanguinetti. Hello, Nico.
Hi, Shelley. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks so much for being here. I always enjoy our monthly check-ins and finding out what is new and exciting at the museum. So how are things at the museum today? I was hoping you could start us off with a reminder about when you're open and how folks can visit.
Definitely. So we are open to the public. We are open Thursdays through Sundays from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. We are asking that people wear masks when they come in, and the free entry is continuing through the summer. So the museum is free of charge. We just ask for face masks.
That's terrific. And who do we thank for the free admission?
We are thanking the Friends of the Juno Douglas City Museum. So it is our Friends organization, and they have been incredibly helpful and generous in this summer, helping to support the museum by free entry through September.
Excellent. And if people want to also help support or become a friend of the City Museum, I saw lots of good ways to do that, easy ways to do that on the website.
Exactly. That's perfect.
Yeah. Will you be open this first Friday?
We are open during the day, but we do not have extended hours, so we will still be closing at 4 o'clock, but we'll be open until then. So if you want to stop by before going to any other evening events, we'd love to see you.
Okay. Good advice. Good suggestion. All right. Well, let's talk about what you're highlighting this month. First of all, the curator chat. And I was just wondering, is this different from some of the videos that you guys have been posting on your social media over the past few months?
It is. So like a lot of institutions, when everything happened with the virus, we have all been looking to shift how we are able to engage with our community, how we are able to put out some of the information that we used to just do in traditional displays. And so one of those methods is our videos. Now, like most people, when we first started, we just kind of were using our phones and talking about interesting topics of historical importance as well as objects in our collection. So we were flying a little bit by the seat of our pants. And so we're slowly working to refine it because we're hoping to continue that series into the future, regardless of the virus situation. So curator chat is kind of what we're moving towards with our various videos and radio segments.
Like this one.
Exactly.
So what is the topic of the next curator chat?
So today we wanted to talk about women's suffrage because this month is actually the 100th anniversary of the ratification of the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote.
That's right. And 100 years is a gigantic milestone. So what are you guys doing to mark the occasion?
We unfortunately do not have anything specific happening in the museum before the virus. There were a lot of programs that were talked about going into effect, some with some of the writing groups, but because of limitations with visitors at this moment, we're not going to be doing anything extra. So we're hoping to highlight it a little bit with some radio presentations and then a video later in the month.
And what objects or information does the City Museum have or want to share talking about what was happening in Juno at that time or anything related to maybe the first women who voted here?
Right. So we don't have a lot of material culture left over from that time period. Juno was the territorial capital. So the first legislature that met was here in Juno. So we do have that history here, but we don't have a lot of artifacts left over for highlighting an exhibit. So really what we have is more of a story of the fight that led to that decision and then the continued fights afterwards. So that's mainly what we're talking about today.
All right. Well, would you like to share some of that story?
I think so, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Perfect. So when you're talking about women's suffrage, there are so many different lines of thought that you follow, and we really can look at it from a nationwide perspective, to a state perspective, to a city perspective. So in doing research about this topic, it can easily track from the 1820s to the 1920s when the amendment was passed. And there were various groups that helped along the way and They had different methods of advocating for women's suffrage. And I do want to point out, when we're talking about women's suffrage in this discussion, we're really talking about white women. That didn't extend to immigrant women, indigenous women, or even really the wives of immigrants or the children of immigrants. So we're really focusing on a specific group of people. And this history is very much one of give and take. So rights had been given at certain periods in different times and different places and then taken away. So a lot of the Western states, some of the Western territories actually, had given women the right to vote in the late 1800s for different reasons, small populations, political strategies, things like that, but they were often then rescinded. And so, on a whole, the nation, women from the United States were not able to vote on larger political matters. And really, by the 1820s, 1830s, there was a huge push against this ideal woman who was a pious, subservient, wife and mother that cared for the home, and really their focus was on domestic duties. And if you look at arguments from the time period, they were still put forward as very important members of society. Their just role had no overlap with political concerns. Their realm was very much in the home with the family. So we start to see a lot more outspoken women throughout the kind of early to mid 1800s. And one of the big events that happened was in 1848, the Seneca Falls Convention. And you do hear a lot about that particular event, and I just find it so interesting that that convention came about because the two organizers actually met at an anti-slavery convention in London, and because they were women, the conference refused to sit them and other female delegates from the United States. So originally, they were looking at a completely different perspective. They were abolitionists, only to realize that they weren't even considered equals in that cause. So it made them look a little bit more internally onto their own cause and start pushing for women's rights. And also, when you're looking at that time period about the Civil War to right afterwards, we start to see the 14th and 15th Amendments, which was making excuse me, trying to think of the right words, I'm blanking here, that basically made black men citizens in the 14th Amendment and 15th Amendment would give them the right to vote. So that's really where you see a big split in the different groups that were advocating for women's suffrage. You had some that supported the 15th Amendment and those who said no to it because they wanted universal suffrage for all. And then you start to really see a political breakdown of motives. And I know all of us today, we see so much political news and so many contrasting opinions and even reporting on the same story with a complete opposite perspective. And you really do start to see it in that time period. Some saying that they didn't want to tie black men's right to vote in with the much less popular right of women to vote. So they thought that they should focus on that first, then women. And then that there were others who were saying, no, we're all equal. And you also see the argument start to change from women are equal to women are different. And at first, it's we're equal to men, therefore we should have the right to vote, to we're different than men, so we should be allowed to vote because we give a different perspective. And that actually really started to work because there were a lot of reform movements happening in that time period, like temperance leagues, anti-slavery groups, religious movements, and they realized if they could get women the right to vote, they would have a huge voting bloc because women were hugely influential in those groups. So that's when you start to see more of a political movement. And so all of that culminated in the amendment in 1920, in which we are still seeing today. And that, again, really just gave white women the right to vote. And it's actually interesting to know in doing all of this research that up until 1931, women lost or gained their citizenship based on the nationality of their husband. So it didn't matter at all where they were born. So on a personal note, my dad's from South America. I have an American mother. My mother would have lost her citizenship upon marrying my father, and I would not be a citizen. So I would not be allowed to vote.
That is so hard to believe that that was all happening in 1920, which, is kind of considered to be modern in so many ways.
Definitely. We think of 100 years as both a huge time period, but then also a very small amount of time. So looking, depending on what your perspective is, we have this moment where 100 years of voting, that's a really long time. That's fantastic. But then when you look at it in the large scheme of, you know, governments and the history of governance, 100 years is really a drop in the bucket. And then even when, if you look further at how long indigenous people or immigrants, it's even shorter. And so we kind of shift our perspective from the United States to Alaska. And Alaska was actually earlier, they were ahead of the curve. A lot of the Western territories were ahead of the curve in giving women the right to vote. And so the first Alaska territorial legislature was in 1913, and they had just gotten the right to have a legislature with the Second Organic Act that year. James Wickersham was a huge proponent of that. It's one of the reasons he has his house memorialized up on the hill. But white men voted on these representatives, but from reading the opinions of the time period, it was very much expected that that wasn't going to last, that women were going to be given the right to vote. And actually, the very first bill that was passed was giving women in Alaska Territory the right to vote. So right off the bat is actually House Bill 2, which is kind of exciting. Again, this is only white women, and it basically gave them female citizens equal voting rights based on the qualifications established for male voters. So they had to be over 21, they had to be Alaska residents for 1 year, and they had to be American citizens. And at that time period, Alaska Natives were not U.S. citizens and were not, and very few were allowed to vote. Even, again, we're talking into that give and take, even when Alaska Natives were given the right to vote in 1924. 1925 came along and they passed a literacy act, and basically saying you had to be able to read or speak English to vote. So given a little bit and then taken away. And it really wasn't until 1945 with Elizabeth Paratovich and the Anti-Discrimination Act that they were given full rights to vote. So always need to point out that when we're talking about women's suffrage, it really isn't everybody. And also, you do have so many different levels of women in culture. You have those who have a lot of money and those who are very much working class. You have those who were born here, can trace their generations back from European heritage, and those of us who are children of immigrants. And it's very, very different stories and very, very different histories. And it's still today talking a lot about systemic racism and how that's impacted our society and how a lot of those rights are still being fought for today. And in, again, doing this research, came to find out, and I didn't know this, but in 1923, the National Women's Party proposed an amendment that prohibited all discrimination on the basis of sex. And it was called the Equal Rights Amendment. And to this day, it's never been ratified. It's been put forward several times. It got a lot of momentum in the 70s. But again, it was defeated because of internal struggles in that idea of what actually does equality mean? Does that mean women can now be drafted? Does that mean we have the same working hours as men? And none of that ever got ironed out. So to this day, as many are seeing with a lot of the protests and political discussions that are happening around the country, while so much has happened, there's still so much more to do and people who are doing that work. So it's a fascinating history of this ability to get the vote, and yet there are many who would argue it still is not as all-encompassing as it should be. So we just wanted to highlight that when you're celebrating 100 years of something, but to look a little bit below the surface and what else that history entails.
No doubt. Nico, thank you for putting all of that in such stark contrast. You would think that we'd be able to make more progress than we did in 100 years, you know? I can't believe it was 1945 before Alaska Natives had the right to vote.
Exactly. And theoretically, in the argument that you see in some of these early newspapers is that they did technically have the right to vote because they were citizens in 1924. But the reality of it was that most of them couldn't write in English, and therefore they were denied the vote. And even those that could were so discouraged from doing so that they didn't utilize that opportunity. So even having the right is very different than actually using it or being encouraged to use it. And many fought to have the right that they had as citizens and were just actively discouraged. So it's a very complicated history and one that I think we're still ironing out and trying to figure out how we move forward with it.
And the anniversary that we're celebrating this month, it makes all that somewhat bittersweet.
Exactly. It's hard when you're looking at these types of milestones, right? We're looking at 100 years of supposed women's suffrage. That's fantastic. But then the flip side of it is seeing that kind of dark history and making sure that we acknowledge it and we move forward with it. And that's kind of, I feel often with my role as the curator of collections and exhibits, is that we're charged with presenting a more rounded history than perhaps some of our predecessors had in the last century, and making sure that the next century on, we're not repeating the same problems. So that's what we're working towards for sure.
Well, thank you for doing that, Nico, and thank you so much for this conversation today. Nico Sanguinetti, curator of collections and exhibits at the City Museum. That's our curator chat.
Thank you so much for letting me talk about it. I think it's just an important subject that we bring up, especially today.
All right. Will you be doing a video along these lines and posting it on the website or the Facebook page?
We definitely will. So especially that August 18th is going to be that official 100 years. So we want to make sure that we get a video up in time for that.
Excellent. And again, the City Museum is open 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Thursday through Sunday, and admission is free through August, thanks to friends of the Juno Douglas City Museum. And you're reachable at 586-3572?
That is correct.
And you have a great website and a great Facebook page. Nico, thanks so much for speaking with me today. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
No, we just hope to see more of our community in the museum, and these are the types of discussions we're hoping to have. So we're here for that. So thank you very much.
Thanks for being here today, Nico.